Good afternoon, Bitcoiners.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
26.
Wow.
Off to a bang.
It's been a long year already.
Yeah, right?
Lots happened.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's intense.
How was your New Year's otherwise?
It was awesome.
Yeah, and your holidays?
It was great. Got to do some fishing. Still eating leftovers. Might have cleaned that out at lunch today. I think it's almost all gone, finally.
Oh, yeah? It was a special meal?
Yeah, man. It's always a special meal.
Okay, what'd you have?
God, that was a while ago. We had a bunch of stuff. I made this crazy squash dish on my own. Bunch of acorn squash, mashed it up, roasted garlic, olive oil, salt, pepper. And then covered it in roasted, salted pecans and pumpkin seeds and pomegranate, fresh pomegranate.
Sounds great.
It was fire.
Okay. All right. I don't know if it's my cup of tea.
But... Well, it was awesome. And then the leftovers of it I made muffins of. Woohoo! I just finished those off for lunch today.
Have you been news fasting?
Kinda. No, well, I mean, I don't know. Bit. I'm just generally slowing down my social media activity.
So what did you make at the news on, what was it, Saturday morning?
What news was that?
Venezuela.
I mean, we've been seeing that coming. I just didn't know when it was going to happen.
Were you following this?
Yeah, we had all of our military parked off the shores. We confiscated a couple ships. We took some oil tankers.
Shot some boats. Killed a lot of people.
You know, we have a couple of Venezuelan, a few Venezuelan employees that were like, you know, finally, let's get this thing done. They're very excited about it. I think what's now emerging is that there was so many reasons for this to take place in regards to the Trump doctrine or the renewed Monroe doctrine and all the other assets that have been seized and or maybe even potentially seized with Bitcoin. So it's interesting. You know, we're definitely going to try and lock down the Western Hemisphere. I guess Cuba's next, then our good friends to the north, maybe Greenland.
Colombia, you know,
Panama Canal,
but you weren't shocked. We essentially on the third.
Bought Argentina's rare earths. So, I mean, like I did, the entire world is reorganizing in a multipolar fashion, and the first move is seize as many assets as you can. If Europe is dying and the euro dollar system is shrinking, then our G-SIBs need assets to collateralize. They need new territories to conquer, right? So
what are the assets that are gained? I mean, obviously.
Obviously the oil, obviously rare earths. I guess I'm looking at, like, you know, we manipulated Latin America for many, many decades to get fruit when it was out of season in the United States, right? Like, I mean, that was like, and to get access to agriculture and things on a seasonal basis. And now it's transitioning to install a U.S. friendly government, or we might just take it, because the United States wants to build a vertically integrated system across the Americas, I believe.
All right. Well, let's keep going here. I mean, Venezuela is the second topic. So,
yeah.
Do you think? That this is going to be sort of more like an Iraq or Libya, or is this sort of more tame and just a transfer of power that we approve of?
Yeah, I think it's a transfer of power that we approve of.
Do you think that we weren't running the Maduro regime or affiliated to Chavez through the CIA?
I think so. Yeah, I believe so.
Do you think that this was Maduro going willingly or unwillingly? I mean, unwillingly or maybe... Sort of transaction.
Well, look, I don't know, but you would, like, if you sort of looked at all the information that we have, right? You would say, okay, there are divisions within the, or there are parties within our Central Intelligence Agency that are maybe working for a global agenda versus a national agenda. And if that global agenda was related to immigration, drug dealing for funding, sex trafficking, potentially flipping elections, right? If there was a control structure and this was a safe haven for them to operate out of, then flipping the regime there to a more U.S. friendly leadership will put pressure on the globalists. It will put pressure on the globalists and Europe because that's where they're stationed. I heard that some of the Dominion offices were actually housed in Soros buildings that he owns in different parts of the world. So you can just sort of see the globalist connections with the drug trade. So if that's being taken out, number one, you've sort of pinched financial infrastructure for the globalist. You have a narrative that supports that because you're taking out the drug trade, that even though they're probably supported by our own internal government. So maybe you're taking out people within that are anti-American within the American system. And you've got oil, right? If your goal is to fix the government balance sheet, then you need to run inflation. If you want to offset that monetary and asset inflation, you want to have cheap oil. So there's another check in the box, right? You're trying to build a Bitcoin strategic reserve and you can acquire $60 billion worth of Bitcoin. There's a check in the box, right? It goes on and on and on and on with all these different things, the rare earths. And then simultaneously, you're seeing JP Morgan is now done something with a smelter to process rare earths. And it sort of puts everybody else on warning, like, hey, look, now my trade negotiations seem a lot more relevant. Like maybe you do want to pay tariffs and be friendly with us because there's a stick behind the carrot. And I'm not saying this is right or wrong or indifferent. I'm just saying this looks like what's happening and will continue to happen throughout 2026. You've also put China on warning. Hey, China, you are getting oil from Venezuela. You're getting oil from Iran. We just did 12 days of bombing in Iran. We just took Venezuela. Maybe you want to like leave our part of the pond alone. And by the way, in April, let's have another talk. So it's sort of like a pretty significant chess move in order for him to push all the different agendas he's trying to push.
What if you maybe take the other side of the coin and you say, well, this is a country without a central bank or without a Rothschild central bank. Iran's also an ally who doesn't, mm-hmm. I mean, this is maybe weakening their ability to resist maybe central banking.
Sure.
And maybe there's other undercurrents here. And I don't think that Venezuela is a large supplier of drugs to America. I think it's like 1% of what drugs are actually coming in.
Right.
And maybe it's us, you know, continuing sort of like, well, we had a lot of illegal immigration or lax border control. We let a lot of people in from this particular country. Mm-hmm. And maybe we shouldn't have. But now we kind of actually have to let them stay because they can't go back. So and we're causing more problems and we get to install people favorable to us. And maybe it's not about. And maybe Maduro is a willing partner through all this, or at least, he said, hey, I don't want the Gaddafi exit, but I think you can exile me and you transfer power to my people anyway. Yeah. Things don't really change on the ground. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
100%. And this is all like, these are all potentials. I think the only thing that we do know is that we know what the narrative is, right? And that narrative sets up a game plan for the rest of 2026. The narrative is narco-terrorism. Mm. Right. It's not the war on drugs anymore. It's a war on terrorism now. And that begets a lot more military might. That begets a lot more executive order power and all these other things that come with it. So this is now become a fight on narco terrorist. And that puts leaders of countries like Mexico and others that have kept a porous border, have potentially helped the corruption and the drug trade, et cetera, might be in bed with them. And I'm not saying we're not either, right? I mean, it's fully documented that the CIA has been involved in these operations as well. But at least it puts everybody who's involved in that operation on some sort of warning. Like either you're playing ball, you're going to help us restructure the multipolar world in a fashion that we want, or you could see some significant force in your region.
Yeah.
And so that's a big message. That's why I say it's like a chess move. And you could focus on whatever part of it is. I think it checks a lot of boxes for his agenda and creates a lot of disruption around the world, right? That disruption is, I think, super significant because it's going to break. It has the potential to significantly break the globalist agenda. If anything, I mean, not to say that they're just going to roll over, right? But it is sort of the signal of like, we are now at war against a globalist agenda. We're going to cut off funding and we're going to try and restructure this thing. And look, I do believe too that at the end of all this, it ends up being once the world order is destroyed, now they're going to put in the order they want, which is not going to be great either. We're going to have to fight that fight down the road. Tom Luongo always says, you know, we're going to fight the fight we have to fight now, and then we'll worry about that down the road. But this is where we're at.
Yeah, I agree. We'll roll the intro after this. I want to read this Dave Collin quote, and then we'll get into the show. So what am I missing about Venezuela? One, it's not about oil per se, but about the petrodollar. Two, the cigar boats were largely bullshit. Three, probably a some Monroe Doctrine 2.0 component. Four, we captured Maduro because he realized it was better than getting a knife up the ass like Gaddafi. Five, it is a made-for-TV story to make it look especially civilized. Six, most of the stories are pure propaganda, although littered with some facts. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got in there. I guess we killed some people, but like, we got into a secret final compartment room. We beat the Russian missiles, the Chinese radar, the Iranian drones.
That's all whatever.
Probably his loyal police force somehow didn't shoot him before we got him. We bring him and his wife back. He's giving thumbs up wearing Patriot Blue Origin sweatshirts about the revolutionaries. I don't know if you heard this story about the gear. All right, we'll get into all that and more.
Are you not entertained?
welcome back to Bitcoin Center live stream number 35 at our new time, brought to you by Byte Federal. Check out Byte Federal's Bitcoin ATMs, point of sale, and Bitcoin wallet. Take self-custody and go bank yourself. My name is Cedric Youngelman.
Paul Tarantino.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Hit like and subscribe.
Let's be real, right? Praising Telegram for launching a Bitcoin wallet. I've always felt like Bukele.
Bitcoin, this digital currency that's out there that people say, oh, it might be the next big thing. What do you think?
I think it's rat poison.
Bitcoin. You never heard them a few weeks ago. Now everybody's talking about them. But is it a currency?
I don't know. Or is it more like a stock? Or is it a tulip bulb?
Or is it
a debate that?
Stupid.
To me, it smells like Ponzi scheme and the greater fool theory, right?
If you do like 5 minutes of freaking research.
Well, good. Thanks for coming to my set talk.
Yes.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh, man, I get that wrong. All right.
Bitcoin's recent rally.
Do you agree? Is crypto finally dead? Go to the next one.
Matter of fact, they're kind of in the Ethernet. What are they?
No. Some rumors that it's a Japanese guy, but I say no, that he's a fake name. It was a pseudonym.
You're literally putting real money onto a system that we don't even know who created it.
It will come to a bad ending.
Is this the most exciting bull run ever?
Not for me. No, it's not.
Welcome to Bitcoin Center, the fast-paced show where the debate is the story.
Many Americans are unaware that behind the scenes, the technical backbone of the financial system is decades out of date, many, many years out of date. You know that. Paul and others are straightening it out, but payments and money transfers are costly and take days or even weeks to clear. Under this bill, the entire ancient system will be eligible for a 21st century upgrade using the state-of-the-art crypto technology. Who would have
that at some point in the not-too-distant future, you won't even have income tax to pay.
because the money we're taking in is so great, it's so enormous, that you're not going to have income tax to pay.
All right, dude, first question. By the way, it was nice of Trump to give me a shout out. So do you think that this is a serious plan to redesign the U.S. financial system, or a narrative shift to focus away, or to focus, get the focus away from hard questions around affordability and inflation?
Oh, this is a massive overhaul, redesign.
You think that's
attack?
That's really coming.
I think that
attack. Use the word attack.
I do, because I think there is a bit of a battle over turf here and how things will play out with the integration of a new system, whether it takes over or they try to overhaul the old system. But I mean, it is an ancient archaic system that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the amount we've seen in the last 12 months push towards stable coins and crypto overall, excluding Bitcoin.
Yes.
Has been dramatic. Just did a show with Aaron Day about this. And I don't think we would have seen 1/10 the amount of progress under a Harris Biden mm-hmm. administration that we've seen towards financial surveillance and CBDCs.
So from your perspective, moving the financial system on chain is for more control.
Absolutely.
By the centralized parties.
Yes.
And how serious are you, do you think he is about this IRS income tax removal?
I don't.
Yeah.
And I think if anything, it's a lift and shift. I think you would just get taxed in a different way.
Right.
And maybe that has some pros and cons and some real pros.
Or maybe income tax goes away for a certain level of
sure.
income.
I mean, I saw a number being thrown around that the United States government collects around 2.4 to 6 trillion, I think, in income tax.
Mm-hmm.
That's not total gross receipts. And obviously, we even spend more than the total gross receipts, but 2.5 in income tax and 1.4 to 6 is fraud. The outlays, the expenditures of government expenditures. So there was like 90% of the people could not be paying taxes. You could say no taxes if we eliminated the fraud.
Mm-hmm.
We could have no taxes for people making less than 500,000.
Right.
I mean, there's just so much room here.
Right.
But no, I don't see any of this actually necessarily
being that simple.
That simple and that beneficiary to us,
right.
beneficial to us. But I do see things, massive changes.
Mm-hmm.
I could see income tax going away. That doesn't mean taxes are going away or that your total tax bill is going
right,
down.
Right.
It's probably going up.
And if it goes, and if everything does move on chain, there's the serious potential that it just gets taken.
Right. Because I don't think it's actually decentralized
right.
chains that this is moving to.
Right.
So I think this is about seizures and censors. There might be some benefits to the consumer around maybe transparency, which I don't think is actually going to happen
mm-hmm.
for the end user, but I think that's maybe the only benefit.
Right.
Maybe some speed and some
yeah, sure.
Cost reductions.
I totally agree.
But I don't think that's going to be shared with the consumer either.
I totally agree. To me, it's like, you know, this whole move to create carbon credits, which were essentially just another asset that they could trade, that they could tax, that they could get tax benefits from, vice versa, creates a whole new market. This moving everything on chain is going to create, and I think we're going to talk about this with Jamie Dimon too a little bit, but it's going to create a whole new paradigm of assets that they can now be involved in,
sure.
making markets in, taxing through capital gains, trading activities, financing activities. I think it's going to be, there's a big push for these GSIBs to get more assets, to have more collateral in the system, to get more things to trade, to 100%. Get bigger, more markets. And I think at best, maybe some lower income earners, I think $500,000 in income is probably too high, but you know, maybe the like families earning under 120, maybe no tax, something like that. But I find it hard to believe, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of debt creation and wealth extraction through natural resources being tokenized.
Yeah.
So they'll say something like the reserves in Venezuela are worth around $20 trillion or $17 trillion. But very little of that is extractable and usable and saleable now.
Right.
But they'll say
if
you tokenize it. But it goes further than
this goes right to Bukele's crypto legislation, not his Bitcoin legislation, his crypto legislation, where they're very pro and they have no tax on tokenized real world assets. And so they're incentivizing wealthy people to tokenize these assets that they own in the country, because then they could trade them, basically create liquidity without taxation. And if, I know we've talked about this a few times, where maybe there's something going on in El Salvador where it's kind of like a template for the future, where they're mm-hmm. floating new ideas and mm-hmm. seeing what works. And this could be, we could be moving to something similar.
Yeah, so I think Venezuela is going to be the larger testbed for everything that's been happening in El Salvador and Argentina.
Possibly, yeah.
And more at scale, and more things, I think more wealth to be extracted directly from the local economy.
Right.
But like, I think like, rainforests are going
to What if they tokenize
They're going to tokenize rainforests.
Right, yeah.
It's going to go beyond oil. Oil right, makes right, sense right, to right. people. Oh, the oil's there, and we can't use it right now, but it's there.
Yeah, we can tokenize it to raise the money.
Right. So why can't you tokenize the minerals that will be extracted from 100%. The rainforest?
That's what they want to do.
100%. Right.
And I agree.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, the next question is on Venezuela. We've kind of talked about this in the intro. I don't know if you have anything else to add there.
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot to be talked about here. I mean, one, is
you
it real?
A clip, guys, you want to play a clip?
Yeah, sorry sure, about let's that. Let's go. Let's play the clip.
So there is a second order crypto effect here where since for going back a decade now, my reporting was back in 2017, because of spiraling inflation of the Bolivar, a lot of people had turned to cryptocurrencies, mining Ethereum and Bitcoin in their homes in order to just have a stable source of cash. But the other side of this is the fact that there are multiple reports that the government itself has been looking to evade sanctions by doing sales of oil in Tether, which they then move into Bitcoin. And so much of this market moves on sentiment. So even the promise that perhaps the U.S. government, when they came in, might seize these assets, hold on to it, that's a bull case for Bitcoin if you have a stockpile such as that that isn't being liquidated.
All right. Very interesting stuff. Very quickly, because we got to go. Is it a tailwind for just Bitcoin or also Ethereum, Solana, and some of these other coins?
It's a rising tide lifts all ships. In fact, XRP has had outsized performance. And when you see one altcoin do particularly well, it really is one of these signs of a risk-on environment.
All right. Mackenzie Sigalos, great to see you as always. Thank you very much.
I mean, we got to get into it. So one, I think self-custody is sort of the silver lining of all this, that I could just I don't know what's happening in Venezuela. Is it going to be good for them? Are our intentions good? Even if our intentions are good, can we execute? Right? And so we want regime change. Everyone feels that, oh, there's a humanitarian effort here. Their voice wasn't heard in the last fraudulent elections. But doesn't mean we're going to execute and deliver. Libya has been a mess since we left. And so, but what about, we can take a president or leader by force, massive power production. We can claim or argue, but really claim access rights and distribution rights to reserves, oil reserves and assets. Even Bitcoin, we might be able to take if, depending on how they secured it. But Bitcoin in self-custody, where you control the majority of keys. So if you're in a multi-sig, but nine people have the keys and you only need five, other people can collude against you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if Maduro's people or Maduro has the keys, if they have coins. I don't know if the country does. I don't know.
Who knows? But the rumor is
there's
a guy who handles the money. I forget his name.
But there's a rumor that DEA helped build them the architecture.
I saw this, I think I tweeted out on, I forget the day this happened or whatever, that this is the state level wrench attack.
It is. But the silver lining is the individual can't be wrenched attack in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And has their own threat vector. But I think it really points a light, like your oil can be taken, your president can be taken. I think it shines light on self-custody. And for me, I think it's like,
yeah, at the end of the day, in any of these kind of attacks, right, you're forced to either defend your life or give up your coins.
Right. But you might not be able to protect your gold coins.
Sure.
So like right now, Bank of England has 2 billion of Venezuela's gold. Venezuela has been forced to sell their gold. So I've heard,
we might have sent some.
I think it took, I heard
to get that.
I heard it took some years to get the gold back to Venezuela. So there was definitely a delay. Some news outlets are still reporting that England still has the gold. But we're only talking about $2 billion in gold. Mm-hmm.
This will all come out over time. I mean,
But if you were a country right now,
yeah,
I think you would rather be thinking about $60 billion in multi-sig Bitcoin than $60 billion in gold or oil.
Sure.
If you were thinking about your own, if you were a regime and you were thinking about your own sort of long-term sustainability as a family or a regime, or even if you were in exile.
That's a good point.
And even if you were there looking about, you didn't want your people and you wanted to keep the wealth within the country.
Yeah, but if that wallet's frozen, if those assets are essentially on lockdown, you can't. How do you extract the value from them?
Well, this is going to evolve in terms of how you secure the Bitcoin.
So it's secured until a point in which you can way move it
better,
anonymously.
Way better than oil.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're
gold
saying.
Gold bricks.
Yeah, it's got potential.
It's got way more potential.
Yep.
There's probably some models and some theories and some people trying things right now in case of or.
Right.
There's somebody in the Maduro family who's running around with 8 figures, 9 figures, 10 figures of Bitcoin.
Sure.
Out of necessity that we're not aware of. So
you're probably 100% right.
You know, because even if they have $60 billion in Bitcoin, I did, we don't know what stories or propaganda, but it's probably not in one address. Probably not in one wallet.
Exactly.
So maybe there's, you know, some petty cash drawer of 10 million sats.
Right. And if this was a negotiated deal, there could have been a bunch of. It'd be interesting.
And Bitcoin has way more asymmetric upside over time, where your family was able to gather some of these sats.
Yeah, they get 100 Bitcoin in a private wallet and shoot it off somewhere.
And it's 20 years, a lot easier to secure that and move that over 20 years than gold.
It's a good point. Yep.
So there's a lot at stake here, but a lot of people are learning, and it's shining a light, in my opinion, a positive light on the essence and ethos of Bitcoin and self-custody.
Yep.
And even these coins, because if these are Venezuelan coins.
How valuable are your tokenized oil assets when the oil's gone? Or your tokenized gold and silver assets?
Or they shut down Oracle.
It's gone. Right.
Or they change the database in Oracle. But the $60 billion in the Bitcoin, now, if we do confiscate that, seize it as the United States government, and follow the United States government policy of keeping stolen, confiscated Bitcoin. One, we're not executing justice. That wealth should be returned to Venezuelans. That's Venezuelan wealth.
Right.
Similar to the pig butchering scam and the victims of that not getting their money back and on. So it's not a clean thing for America. We're stealing.
Surprise? That'd be terrible. Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. But, you know, some Bitcoiners will point to, not Bitcoin, some mathematicians, it's just math, there'll be less Bitcoin for sale. That $60 billion will be locked up.
Yeah.
And that just has its own effect.
Yeah, you exactly.
Know? So it's interesting times.
Yep. Bitcoin never disappears. It's just either moving or not. It's either liquid or not.
What do you think about it? Okay, I saw a video on social media of Maduro taunting Trump pre.
Mm-hmm.
Then I saw videos of Trump taunting back after we got him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very powerful, brash. I don't know if that's how I want to be represented as an American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's disgraceful in some ways. Some people would argue, you know. So definitely, you know, it goes back to the theory of like the money's broken. Everything's going to get worse. And by worse, I mean more dramatic, more of a nastier food fight.
Right.
Politics are just getting...
Yeah, and it's
maybe it's not nasty, but it's not
these
definitely dirty.
These are the times that we live in. There's nothing that power structures are going to do everything they can to survive. The United States is shrinking; their global influence is shrinking. So they need to become
a
dominant regional player. And the way they're looking at it is their region is the Western Hemisphere. Minus Europe, they're going to throw Europe overboard, right? As Luke Groman says, they're going to stand on Europe's head to stay afloat in the pool. Like that's where we're at in the world, and that's what the United States is doing, whether we like it or not. this probably will lead to a lot of internal unrest amongst the civilization over time. I tend to believe that, you know, we're going to see a lot of these kind of conflicts, not only performed by the United States, but performed by other powers around the world, as there's a rush to consolidate power and assets in their regions before this reset is done. And then after that, I think we'll see a power play of a technocracy-like power play, surveillance state, digital IDs, et cetera. And then you're going to start to see these people that are tearing at each other's throat unite against the government. And that at the end of this fourth turning, the final gameplay is going to be people versus their governments. On the way there, it's going to be governments against governments, civil wars, civil unrest, and it ends with the people unifying against the authoritarianism within their governments. And this is a decade-long process, in my view. We're just seeing, you know, the first card get flipped over on the table.
Right. What a display of power, though. I don't know if I believe the entire story.
It's a lot of theater.
I think it's a lot of theater.
Yeah.
But I think regardless of how much theater it is, it could be 100% theater.
But
I think the capabilities that were displayed in the theater are real and or have to be interpreted as real by our enemies and our allies.
I think they're also just scratching the surface of our capabilities. I think I think by the end of this, you know, between now and the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see shit that we didn't even know existed get used in these operations.
So I think in a lot of ways you're talking about some sort of cyber kinetic sort of capabilities.
Weapons but we're not even aware of. Energy sources we're not aware of.
I mean, but dial back from that, just basic, to fight across the world for more than the plane to get. You have to have the plane to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you want to stay there, you have to be able to keep the planes there,
yeah,
which are boats, aircraft carriers.
Right.
To keep the aircraft carriers there, you have to feed those people thousands of miles from home. These are all just basic logistics that most nations, probably zero besides us, have the capabilities just to sustain warfare far away.
Right.
That's
inflationary, period.
But I mean, what do you mean inflationary?
I mean, we can't sustain that.
Well, logistically, we could feed people a month. Like I'm saying,
it's going to be a lot easier to sustain a war.
I don't mean for years. I mean, even for a month, 2 months. No other nation could dock aircraft, sure, carriers, submarines, fighter jets.
It depends how much how much money they're willing to print. Right? I mean, fiat is the currency
they don't
of
have
war.
They can't print the weapons. They don't have the aircraft carriers.
I think China has plenty.
I think they're catching up. I don't think they're there.
They could catch up to us. I think they could catch up to us in a matter of a week or two if they wanted to.
Looking for the evidence.
I think if there's any place that they are behind us, it's in secret military infrastructure, deep state type, you know, military industrial complex infrastructure that we're not even really aware of, or we think are UFOs, alien technologies, right? I think we have a lot of that, and I think we've had it for a long time, and it's probably evolved to the point that you can't even fathom. So, you know, to the extent that it's going to take a lot of monetary inflation to support these kind of colonization, I think simultaneously we could run some deflationary technology in energy and manufacturing that I think we have the capability of that we haven't implemented yet.
Do you think China could, I mean, all of it, it's an honest question I'm asking, mm-hmm, send warships to Ukraine a few months in advance, run exercises in the whatever
right,
body of waters right next to Ukraine.
Black Sea.
Shoot boats of Ukrainian boats and kill Ukrainians.
I think
narco-terrorists.
I think China.
While we're watching all of this,
right,
then take Zelensky after.
I think China could.
Did you know Maduro agreed to come?
Wouldn't
to,
because they're a.
I don't think they could.
They're a manufacturer of the world that relies on exporting goods all over the planet.
I think this setbacks so the Belt and Road Initiative.
Right. If they, I think they could do that, but it's not in their interest to do that.
I'm because not if sure.
they
did it,
they would destroy their country as a manufacturer for the world.
Where we could go and do that.
We export dollars.
Right. And we have the, so we could do this and no other country can.
Right now.
Right now. Yes, right now. Which is also to your point why it's so scary.
We're burning our bridges.
Right. That's why it's so scary.
We could do it, but we are burning our bridges in the process. We're making enemies. Just like we've, you know, in all of our wars in the Middle East have created so much conflict that there's a whole multiple generations of people that probably hate the United States and would like nothing more than see the United States fall because of the chaos and destruction we've created in their countries. And so whenever you have this kind of force, you're building enemies, right? So yes, we could do it. I think China could do it. I think China is thinking to themselves, why would we do this? Because we would be destroying ourselves because they have a much longer term mentality. I think a dying empire feels like they have to flex. Like their mindset is still we dominate the world while what's happening financially is that they're losing power and control.
I wonder if, you know, there was a deal between China and Trump. Hey, we get Venezuela, you stay out of there. You get Taiwan, we're not gonna.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if there was a deal with.
I think Taiwan,
I don't know if this is a deal with Russia, same thing with Ukraine, or a threat.
Yeah, who knows?
Hey, you know, we've been letting you.
Yeah, that's happening simultaneously, right? You hear Japan saying that, you know, if China takes Taiwan, this is like a game changer for Japan.
We can't access energy.
It blocks the Malacca Strait. We have all these issues. It's existential for Japan. In the meantime, right, their bonds are rising. Their interest rates are rising. Inflation is coming hot and fast to Japan. So, you know, yeah, I do think China's probably, that's as part of this infrastructure restructuring, China probably will take Taiwan.
Yeah.
But this is resetting.
Or maybe this is a message to them, don't. Maybe this is a message, we're taking the Western Hemisphere back and we want you to chill and pause and we can come there too. I don't know.
We'll find out.
All right.
We'll find out.
Let's move on.
2026 is the year of finding out.
Well, welcome to our new time. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern or 2:30. And this is Bitcoin Center, live stream number 35, brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself. Please hit like and subscribe. Ask questions in the chat. Let's run on to Jamie Dimon here. Let's clip.
Blockchain is real. It's been around for quite a while, but now it's becoming more effective, more efficient, because people are finding ways to do it faster and cheaper, permissioned or not permissioned. Smart contracts, I think, will.
What do you think? JD, is he coming around or is this the game plan along?
JP Morgan has had ownership or they sold. They've been basically developing code on the Ethereum code base for a long, long time. They sold it to Consensus, as a lot of the tech and contracts that they developed, they sold to Consensus. So they've had this ongoing relationship with Ethereum. Again, they're a bank. They want to tokenize everything so they can trade everything and make markets and everything. So his move to, he didn't say anything good about Bitcoin.
No.
They're going to lend against Bitcoin as collateral. I think, you know, really what people have to realize is that these big banks want you involved in crypto. They want you involved in real world assets. They want you in tokenized securities. They want to lend against your Bitcoin in hopes that they can get it from you when you default on the loan.
Yep.
They want to get the Bitcoin in their custody, and everything they're going to deliver to you that's crypto is going to be centralized on an exchange, custodied by them, permissioned.
I'll say, I mean, I think Jamie Dimon is smart. I think he's straight gangster. I'd go further. I think Wall Street's been run by the actual mob for a long time. It's interesting. When he talks about Bitcoin, he sounds like a mobster from New York. When he talks about crypto, even, but there he talked very eloquently and like a banker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing to watch with JP Morgan is they're going to do tokenized deposits. So not stable coins.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to take your money and say you have a deposit here, and they can provide maybe yield, and they can do fractional reserve banking off of the tokenized deposits. Right. So I think that's the thing to watch.
And even if they let you self-custody,
they're not.
It's going to be on a proof of stake or a centralized server that they can sanction.
Control, manipulate. Yeah. All right, let's move on to El Salvador. It seems like they're making a pivot here, and they're making Bitcoin voluntary, still legal, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. And this helped them get more aid from the IMF. Do you sort of?
Yeah, that's the way I read it.
Do you have take here? This seems to be a blended road.
This is sort of the same kind of the same opinion I've had forever with El Salvador is that it's the difference between I don't think this takes anything away from Naib's belief in Bitcoin, what he's doing to educate kids in the country, what he wants to do with mining, what he wants. But I think there's bigger things there, which is that in conjunction with building their Bitcoin reserve, they also need to build a functioning country and take it up a notch. They're expanding development, they're building new roads, they're building new infrastructure, everything. It all takes money. And is Bitcoin... This move. Let me say one more thing. This move to make Bitcoin voluntary, even when it was mandatory, when I was there and it was mandatory, people that didn't want to accept it didn't accept it. It was never enforced as mandatory.
I think El Salvador has been a very interesting project. It's something to be excited about in a lot of ways, and mm-hmm. there is a lot of excitement. I think that could be, we've seen it time and time again, affinity marketing and scamming. I'm not saying there's a difference between marketing and scamming, but you could just say, hey, we sell toothpaste and we're Bitcoin, and that there's an affinity to that, right? Mm-hmm. Like the toothpaste is not any different, but you're conveying it's made with things you would like as a Bitcoiner, right? This country is a Bitcoin country. The beach is better because it's the same beach, but we take Bitcoin at the concession stands, right? So you can have affinity marketing by just
mm-hmm.
Right. What I want to get into here, though, real quick. So El Salvador integrates Bitcoin and AI into national policy. Mm-hmm. I think this is where it's a little ominous. So according to O'Daily, El Salvador has officially announced the integration of Bitcoin and artificial intelligence as part of its national policy. The country's treasury. So they have 660 million in Bitcoin. Even if Bitcoin 10X is at 6 billion, it's not a lot of money, even for a nation their size. The plan aims to utilize surplus geothermal energy to build data centers and AI special zones, providing a tax-free environment for the automation industry and decentralized financial services. Mm-hmm. All things I'm nervous and weary about mm-hmm. that are not necessarily decentralized in true form and could have some sort of Orwellian side to it. And I think they're even trying to put the entire educational platform on AI, these things can sound progressive and great, but they can be very dark. And I think...
Yeah, they can be the Vatican Library of Information.
Yeah. So it remains to be seen. That's all I wanted to say there.
No, I agree with you on all these points. I think El Salvador, though, I think when it comes down to this specific question about their deal with the IMF, to switch to voluntary Bitcoin as opposed to a mandated, you must accept Bitcoin.
I think that's actually in the Bitcoin ethos.
That is in the Bitcoin ethos, but it's also the way they operated from day one.
Mm.
There was a whole bunch of the population when it was mandated that you must accept Bitcoin that they just didn't. And it really wasn't enforced. And so if anything, if this is what he had to promise to IMF to get 1.4 billion, good on him, because that's just like a...
Yeah, I get both sides.
It's an empty promise. Yeah. I mean, to the IMF, they're like, okay, he's probably, sure. Yeah,
and you make the deals you have to make. Let's move on here real quick. So Bitfarms pivots to AI. So they're selling their mining facilities in Paraguay. They're moving out of Latin America. I think a lot of this is to raise cash, move to a more consistent cash flow model that comes out of AI data centers, move their facilities back to North America where they have a lot more competitive advantage and geographical proximity and knowledge. So I think this is kind of par for the times.
Yeah. I mean, look, they lost money mining Bitcoin.
Yeah, it was a tough year.
They weren't competitive. So
look, I'm in a mining pool.
They're gonna do what's right for their business.
Yeah, I'm in a mining farm. We had our first negative month in about like 18. Mm-hmm. It's tough out there for miners right now.
Yeah.
So all right, let's move on.
Which is interesting because when I read this, that's kind of the sense that I got. And think about how much miner capitulation you get near a bottom versus a top. Is there some sort of signal here that we might be near a bottom? Stayed flat for over a year, and then these miners are starting to have
financial problems get turned out.
Anticipated, probably invested infrastructure, so anticipating $200.
Well, hash rate was competitive and high.
Yeah.
Price was low or sideways.
So I mean,
capital intensive industry. All right, let's move on here.
All right, the government Bitcoin holdings. Governments currently hold 3.1% of the Bitcoin supply, worth $58.6 billion. Strategic accumulation trend for 2026 or a double-edged sword amplifying regulatory overreach? What do you think?
I'm going to go with the first one. I mean, I think you're seeing accumulation by governments here. U.S. has 328,000 now, and a lot of that's through auctions. Some has been auctioned off previously to that. China has 190,000 from the Plus Token case. United Kingdom is 61,000 from the Keon case. Ukraine is 46,000. Germany had 50,000, sold 50,000. El Salvador is up to 7,500. UAE is up to 6,400. Bhutan is up to 6,000. So maybe not as high as we thought. Netherlands up to 500 through cybercrime seizures. And the list goes on and on. Even North Korea is rumored to have 800. So I think this is incredibly bullish.
Yeah, it's the hash war theory. It's coming through.
All right, let's move on here. Next.
All right, chain analysis.
Yeah, what did you make of this little news item here?
Well, let me read it to you. So sure. Chain analysis sees 2026 focusing on compliance, scalability over rulemaking, an evolution towards mature markets or a subtle barrier raising for small players. I mean, it's obviously both, right? I mean, they're right, and they're shifting over from rulemaking to compliance, and it is going to create a barrier for smaller players. We see it every day in our business. I mean, we've been highly compliant from day one, but now they really want to get in, and they really want to make sure that you really are truly as compliant as they want you to be. Whereas before, as long as you were seemingly following the rules, there weren't a lot of questions asked, but now they want to actually get in and see the inner workings. So I think this is truly the case in that it is going to be now more and more difficult for a small crypto company to come from the bottom up out of the garage and become a big player, because there are going to be pretty significant regulatory moats that have existed in the traditional financial system for decades that are being imposed through this new rulemaking onto the crypto ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, Operation Choke Point 2.0 was successful. It crushed a lot of nascent and emergent players, maybe some rightfully so. And it's now entrenched a lot of incumbents from the old system. And they'll have an easier time, the incumbents, of entering the system in the future by acquiring and then the war continues with Keone Rodriguez, Samurai, and the fight on privacy and self-custody.
What happened in the internet, it's similar to what's happened with a lot of technologies. It will probably drive a lot of M&A, and we're going to get a lot more. And look at the main takeaway for Bitcoiners: do not give up your self-custody. Self-custody is the antidote to all of these issues and fears that you have. Be compliant, keep your nose clean, and hold your own Bitcoin, and don't get involved in any of the derivatives thereof.
Yeah, and this is Bitcoin Center, live stream number 35. Please hit like and subscribe if you're enjoying the show. It's brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself. They got the Bitcoin ATMs, the point of sale, and the Bitcoin wallet. Take self-custody now. If we have any questions in the chat, but please hit like and subscribe. Tune in every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, maybe 2 p.m. Eastern.
2 p.m. Eastern.
2 p.m. Eastern, yeah. So every Tuesday at our new time during the afternoon. If there's any questions, hope to see you guys next week for sure. Francis, we have anything before we roll out here?
No questions.
You're right. Okay. Let's make it a great 2026.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a huge and awesome 2026 for sure.
Love you all.
All right, see you guys next week.